Everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business. We use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. Now, why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were looking at an old-timey article dated back in 1984, which had some quotations in there by Walter Cronkite, the old CBS news anchor, before Dan Rather, if you'll remember. In some cases, it's probably before many of you were born. But a fellow by the name of George Orwell wrote a book called 1984, and they were paraphrasing some of the parallels from that book, 1984, with the state of affairs back in the early 1980s when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States. And they pointed out that the computer age was making giant inroads into the privacy of the average Joe Sixpack American. Well, boys and girls, even without the computer, government has made giant inroads into the privacy of the average Joe Sixpack American, but not because of the computer per se, but because Joe Sixpack American has been trained from the first grade, from the first day that he entered the school institution, to surrender his Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights to privacy. Taught and trained. Now, you have a constitution, and you have a constitutional right to be protected by government in your person, in your houses, in your papers, and in your effects. Person, houses, papers, and effects. If you practiced your Fourth Amendment rights, you would have all of the privacy that's possible for you to obtain under our Constitution. If you practice the law of God in connection with the Fourth Amendment, you would have all of the privacy that you are entitled to from our Constitution and all of the privacy that you're entitled to under the Old Covenant from God Himself, which is about all the privacy that you can obtain. There isn't any more. You can have privacy. But if you want privacy, you've got to know what it is and how to obtain it. Otherwise, I think that makes a lot of sense. If you want something, you've got to know what it is. And then you have to know how to obtain it. Now, I'm not complaining about my privacy. There are some things that even I don't know. For instance, I don't know how many hairs there are in my head, but God says He does. So that's an area of privacy that I'm not entitled to and that I cannot obtain. I mean, that's just where reality is. Now, I don't think anybody in the federal government knows how many hairs are on my head, but the mere fact that God does and I don't tells me that there are some areas in life where I probably don't have very much privacy. Most of us have some privacy, government still allows you to have some privacy. It's in those areas that they have not discovered yet, or in those areas where there isn't any money to be made. Insurance companies want to know more and more about you, and that's because they want to sell more and more insurance policies and pay out fewer and fewer claims. The pharmaceutical industry, they want to know more and more about you because they want to sell you more drugs, and they want to have fewer and fewer claims against them for wrongful death or for some other cause. Government wants to know more and more about you so that they can tax you more, give you fewer benefits, and still keep you voting for them. Now, these are pretty tricky objectives if you stop and think about it for a moment. If you had your druthers, if you had a free marketplace, if you had freedom in the marketplace, you would make bigger, better decisions for yourselves and fewer bad decisions that favor insurance companies and favor government or favor some other institution like the pharmaceutical industry. I remember when I went to the first grade, when I was first institutionalized, my teacher taught me to write my name at the top of every paper that I passed in. Before long, she had me putting my name and the date on every paper, and she would write the date up on the blackboard so that we knew what the date was. And pretty soon she had us writing our name, the date, and then the name of the paper, spelling paper, arithmetic paper, you know, writing paper, whatever it was, on each paper. And slowly but surely, in that public school environment, I was taught to surrender my Fourth Amendment rights. I was taught to become a member of a group. And I was dissuaded from being an individual because individualism does not fit into the group. The Fourth Amendment is aimed at individuals, not groups, and so the Fourth Amendment has to be subjugated. We can't obliterate it because it's a constitutional provision, but we can teach and train you from the first grade, from the time you're 6 years old, to waive your Fourth Amendment rights, and that's what's happened to Americans. Today, Americans have driver's licenses, business licenses, marriage licenses. Today, Americans want welfare and food stamps and benefits from government. They want insurance. They want drugs. They want hospitalization. They want all of these benefits and freebies that are delivered to them by these various and sundry institutions. And in order for them to get these benefits, they have to surrender a certain portion, not all, but a certain portion of their Fourth Amendment rights, Fifth Amendment rights, First Amendment rights, Seventh Amendment rights, Tenth Amendment rights. I mean, and it chips away and chips away and chips away until finally, and in the final analysis, we have people who have virtually no privacy left. Now, soldiers in the Army have virtually no privacy. From the time this kid was 6 years old until today, when he is a person who is in the military, he has never experienced a moment of privacy in his entire life. And now he's in public service. He's in public service, never having experienced anything like privacy. He doesn't expect it. He doesn't believe in it. He doesn't know anything about it, and he doesn't care anything about it. You see, privacy is only important to people who care about it. You know, once you get trained to the point where you don't have it, don't expect it, and don't care about it, it's an irrelevant subject matter. Now, I was institutionalized. I never went into the military, but I was institutionalized, and so I have school records. And those school records, by the way, are still there, and they will probably be there long after I'm dead and buried. For instance, I wanted to dig into those school records or to see what was available to me in school records, and I went back to 1957, graduation year, from Ferndale High School. Hell, I got the whole thing right there. Everything I did in Ferndale High School, every paper that I signed, every class that I attended, every teacher that taught me. I can't even remember the names of the teachers, but it's all in the records. It's all in the record. Well, there's no privacy there. Not that anybody would care very much about George Gordon's high school records in Ferndale, California in 1957, but, you know, it's there. And I created all those records. Those records don't exist today because somebody was following me around back in 1957 and writing all of this down and then putting it into a dossier somewhere. That didn't happen. It was George Gordon that produced all of those records, all of those events that transpired, the interaction, you know, that went with it. I remember I started to get interested in privacy back in the 1980s, and my son Ted was entering high school about 1980 or 81, something like that. Well, he was born in 68, 78. 88, let's see, so it was around 1984, I guess, when we did this, about 1984. He was going into the ninth grade. And you have to take your child up and have him registered. And I was starting to get interested in this thing called privacy over here. And I'd looked into school records and one thing and another. And so you have to register your children for school. So he was my oldest, and he was the first one to enter the ninth grade. And so I went up with him. In fact, up until then, his mother had always taken him up, you know, and registered him for school, you know, and school to go to. And so I took him up to the high school, and I said, Ted, let's test something here. And he said, okay, Dad. So we walked into the registration room, you know, and this lady, nice lady, sure, she handed us a form, you know, and they want to know your name, address, and phone number, and one thing and another. And so we sat down and we filled out the form, you know, the one I described to you the other day, where we went into the office of the medical clinic, and they want to know your name, address, and phone number, and social security number, and all these various and sundry things. Now, my boy didn't have a social security number, and we had avoided that for some reason. I'm not quite sure why, but we'd avoided the social security number, and the child didn't have one. So here he is. He's about 14 years old or so, you know, and he's entering high school. And so we put his name at the top of the page, you know, Ted Gordon. And then they wanted to know such things as address and phone number and one thing and another. And I got to thinking about that for a minute. I said, what if a kid didn't have an address? I mean, just, you know, being pragmatic and all, what if this kid lived out on a ranch or a farm someplace and there was no address? I guess you'd have a post office box, wouldn't you? I guess you could put post office box 287, you know, Prairie, Idaho. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here that you were poor and you didn't have a post office box. You couldn't afford the $60 a month or the $60 every 6 months, I guess it is, for post office box. What if you received your mail by general delivery? What if you were poor and lived under a bridge? You know, there are poor people in the world like India and Pakistan and Bangladesh and Mexico City, you know, that live in little shanties and they don't have the amenities that we have here in the United States. So I thought we'd test that one a little bit, and so we left out the address. And does everybody have a telephone? You know, most people, you know, have telephones. I think most people in Boise, Idaho, middle class, you know, Americans have telephones. But, you know, what if you didn't have one? Well, what if for some reason you didn't want this person to call you? What if you had a pedophile over here and he said, hey, little girl, little boy, what's your telephone number? And you didn't want this pedophile. What if you had a pedophile move in down the street, and he's walking down the street one day and you're sitting on your front porch and he says, hi, I'm the local pedophile. I just moved into the neighborhood. I've registered with the police. What's your telephone number so I can call you sometime? Would you want to give your telephone number out to the local pedophile, even though he's properly registered with the police? You know, I got to thinking, you know, there's just a lot of people out there that I probably would not want to talk to on the telephone and that I wouldn't want to give my telephone number to. In fact, there are so many people that don't want to talk to you on the telephone that they have their telephone numbers unlisted. So there must be some provision in the law for people to have unlisted telephone numbers to protect them from telephone calls from people that they don't want to listen to. And I got to thinking, well, what the hell makes it so incumbent upon us to listen to the telephone calls that come from some public school nurse or some public school teacher or some public school administrator? Do you know whether or not these people are pedophiles? Do you know whether or not these people are communists, Republicans, Democrats, Catholics, Protestants, Jews? I mean, has it ever occurred to you that you might not want to talk to somebody from the public school system? I know it's kind of a wild off-the-wall concept, but it just crossed my mind that, you know, people who don't have telephone numbers in the telephone book, they, for some reason, want to protect the privacy of their telephone number. So why is it so incumbent that because somebody gives you a piece of paper that says phone number, that you have to put your phone number on there? Or it says address, that you have to put your address on there? If you were down at the local Winchell's Donut Shop, having a donut and coffee, a guy walks by your table and he says, hi, I'm the local pedophile. I'm registered with the police. I'm legal. I served my time and I'm out on parole. I'd like to know what your address is. Here's a form. Fill it out and give me this information. I don't think you'd fill it out for the local pedophile. What if a guy walked up and he says, hey, I'm from the local IRS office. I'm here to protect and serve. I'm your local public official. And I would like to know more information about you. Fill out this form and tell me where you work and how much money you make and how often you file your tax returns. And by the way, why don't you drop 4 or 5 of your tax returns by my office so that I can just check them and see whether or not you're paying all the taxes that you owe as a public service, free of charge. I won't even charge you for it, like H&R Block does. You know, when you stop and think about it, there are some people in the world that you probably don't want to talk to. And I thought we would test this with the local public school. And so we went down the list. My boy's 14 years old, and you know, I'm suggesting to him, I said, now, do you really want these people to have that piece of information about you? Do you really think that it's good for you that these people who are total strangers? Now, when you fill these pieces of paper out, the lady who gives you the form, just like the young girl who gave me the form in the doctor's office, I'm sure that she was a clean, wholesome young woman who didn't have any malign intent, who was going to enter this information into their computer database. Remember, she said, without your social security number, we can't enter this into our computer. She's probably not going to use that information for some malign purpose, but then once it's entered into the computer, other people are going to have access to it, aren't they? Who else is going to have access to this information? And you know, if you stop and think about it, did anybody say, now, nobody is going to have access to this information? No, nobody tells you that. Are they going to forward this information to the American Medical Society or the American Medical Association? Are they going to afford it, send it off to some a national institution or organization, you know, for credit references or credit information? Are they going to send it off to insurance companies and insurance institutions? Are they going to send it off to any government institutions or agencies? You know, one of the neat pieces of privacy information is when you go down and register for the draft. And in fine print, they say this information may be given to the following agencies. And there's about 10 or 15 other government agents and agencies. And so you fill out this information on your draft, and you're going down and you're going to register, you know, for the draft, your Selective Service card. And they tell you right on there, we're going to give this information to 15 other agencies over here. And it's purely a fishing expedition to see whether or not you're an illegal alien and so on. Now, of course, if you're not any of those things and you haven't broken any laws, and there's no reason for you not to fill it out. And this is what you're always bombarded with. Well, if you don't have anything to hide, then there isn't any reason for you not to fill it out. Well, boys and girls, I do have something to hide. Yes, it's true. George Gordon does have something to hide. And what I'm hiding is my privacy. You see, privacy is made up of those things about me that you don't know and that you can't find out and that I'm not going to tell you. Things that are none of your business. Things that could benefit you greatly. Things that could enrich you. Things that could make you a lot of money. Things that you're not entitled to. Things that I don't have to give you. And things that I'm not going to give you. That's what privacy is all about. Whether your wife reached orgasm in your last sexual escapade is nobody's business but you and your wife. And you're not out here putting that on a piece of paper, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised. You know, there's a guy by the name of Dr. Kinsey. You ever heard that name, the Kinsey Report? He went around talking to Americans, asking them questions just like that. People answered his questions. That's right. He would come in. This guy was a sex pervert. He was a sodomite. And because he had doctor, you know, written on his name and he had letters after his name, he went around and he said, well, I'm going to run around and find out about all the sexual activity that goes on in America. And he wrote this real famous book called The Kinsey Report back in the 1950s. And then he was out here researching, and he'd go into people, and he would ask them these kinds of probing questions. And I'm not kidding you a bit, people answered his questions, and he wrote them down. He said, I took a survey over in this or that college, and I wanted to know how many of these young girls over here were having sexual relations with boys before they were married. And they told him. I would think that was something that was kind of personal and private that I personally wouldn't tell anybody about, but then, you know. Now, I'm not opposed to people who don't want privacy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, if you want to tell everybody about your personal sexual activities, you certainly have a right to do that. I'm not suggesting that you ought to hold that in or keep it secret or anything like that. I'm just suggesting that God Almighty himself, you know, has allowed you certain areas of privacy. Our founding fathers, under our constitutional system of government, believed that government was necessary and imperative, but there were some things that government didn't have any business getting involved in. And so they made provisions, you know, for various religious ideologies like Amish and Mennonites and Jehovah's Witnesses and Catholics, Protestants and Jews and Muslims and others and atheists and said, well, you know, there's certain areas of life, you know, where you have a right to privacy. We're going to protect that. So if you want to give it up, that's your business in life, and when you go down and you sign up for the draft, you give up certain information. In fact, you actually agree that the information that you're giving to the Selective Service System can be given to the INS and the State Department and all these agencies that they list on there. Now, most people do not know how to fill out a government form, and especially when the form says, you have to answer these questions by law. I covered that for you the other day. There's an exception written in the law in every one of these cases. Of course, Americans that don't know about privacy don't know about the exceptions written in the law, and so they say, well, it's the law, and so I got to do it. And so they just kind of hunker down, and they go ahead and surrender their privacy, surrender their rights out of ignorance. I mean, they've been to public school. What else would you expect? So tuck away in your heart some of these concepts over here. My boy now filled out the form in the high school. And when we got to the end of the form, there wasn't very much information that he gave him. He gave him his name. He didn't give him his address, telephone number, parents' names, or anything else. He appeared. The law requires that you appear and register for school. So he walked in the door and said, I'm here to register. She handed him a form and said, fill this out and give us this information. Down at the bottom it says, parent or guardian, sign here. I didn't sign it. And when the lady looked at it, she says, well, you've got to fill this out. And I said to the lady, I said, well, why do I have to fill it out? And she said, it was the law. And I said, well, where is this law? She didn't know. Just like the census lady, she didn't know. And I said, now, as I understand the law, and I'm a law school teacher now, I just kind of threw that out there. I said, I researched the law, and from what I can make out of it, or from what I can determine, the law does require that this boy be educated in one of three forms. Here in Idaho, he has to be educated in public school, private school, or homeschool. And if we elect public school, he has to register for school. And we're here to register, but there isn't anything here in the law that says that I have to give you my telephone number.
And she asked the question, she says, well, what is it about this information here that you're objecting to? And I said, well, I think that you're probably a pedophile, and I don't want you to have my children's telephone number. And she was really offended that I would think that she was a pedophile. And I said, well, lady, are you a pedophile? And she said, no. And I said, well, how do I know that? Do pedophiles say, yes, I'm a pedophile registered with the police? Or do they deny it and hide it? No, does the average Boy Scout troop master who's a pedophile say, hey, listen, let me register here as a Boy Scout troop master, I'm a pedophile. Does the average Catholic priest register with the police and say, hey, I'm a pedophile or a sodomite, let me register? And you want to give this Catholic priest your telephone number, your address? I mean, you know, it's up to you. I'm not telling you, you know, that every preacher or every Catholic priest is a pedophile. I'm just telling you that there's three or four of them out there. Many people have unlisted telephone numbers because they don't want just everybody calling them. And when you register your kid for school, I'm sure that the nice lady who's taking your application is probably clean, pure, and wholesome, and a virgin. But I don't know who she's going to give the information to. I don't know, five or six levels of bureaucracy down the line or up the line, if those people are as pure, clean, and wholesome as the nice lady who's taking the information. And I don't know what they're going to do with it. So I thought, well, you know, once you give it, it's gone. It's kind of like the information that was collected by the Ferndale High School back in 1957 is now public information. Hell, any of you people out there can get it. Not that I had anything to hide back in 1957 or that I have anything to hide today, but let me tell you, there isn't anything about my high school career in Ferndale, California that's private. And so I thought about that a little bit, and I said, you know, I don't think all you people out there need to know about my grades in English in 1957. I'm not particularly proud of my grades of 1957, nor am I particularly saddened by them or ashamed of them, but, you know, it's none of your damn business. That's the way I see it today. And now it's out there, and I can't do anything about it, and now I'm kind of sorry that I allowed that information to become public, and now that it is public, I look back on it and say, gosh, maybe I could warn somebody out there that, you know, 30, 40, 50 years from now, you might not be nearly as interested in people knowing about you in the 12th grade as you are today. So you might want to be thinking about that, because I mentioned this to you the other day, that military records of Revolutionary War veterans that were fighting for George Washington in 1777 in Valley Forge, those military records are still in the Pentagon to this day. And those boys are all dead, you know. I don't think there's any of them still living. How come the government's still keeping those records to this day? I don't know. Government just keeps records because I think that's the way governments work. And I'm sure that the people that are dead today don't really care one way or the other, but I just wanted to point that out to you, that once the information is out there, it's out there. Now, there's a bright spot that comes in here. I went into the Bank of Idaho some years after I'd closed my account and closed the Atlantis Manufacturing Company. And there was a bank officer there. Her name was Margaret Wolfgram. And Maggie was my banker one time. And I went in, and I hadn't had a banking account, you know, for 3 or 4 years. So I went in, I sat down, and I said, well, hi, Maggie, you remember me? And she looked at me for a minute. She says, well, yes, of course, I remember you, Mr. Gordon. I haven't seen you for a long time. What are you doing? And I said, I'm not doing anything, and I'm doing that very slow. And we chit-chatted a little bit, and I said, I thought I would come into the bank and see how much information the bank was still carrying about me. And she said, well, what is it that you want to know? I said, do you have any of my canceled checks from 1980 or 79, 80, 81? And she said, well, what's your account number? And I said, well, I don't have an account number. I closed my account in 1981 in February of 81, and I haven't had an account here since. And she says, oh, we don't have any information about you at all. See, we only keep this information for 1 year. And I said, well, that's interesting. So you mean when I close my account, the bank only keeps this information for 1 year? Said, yeah, except for your checks. We keep those for 6 years for IRS purposes. I said, so every year as these checks become 6 years old, we throw that out in the microfilm and everything goes. We don't keep that because there's no money on it. It costs money to keep these records. And if you're not a current depositor, if you're not a current customer, well, then we're not making any money off of you. So there's no point in keeping these records, is there? I said, well, that's very interesting. I said, how about credit reports and things like that? I said, well, you know, credit companies keep these statistics for 6 years. But if you're not active, they throw them out also because there isn't any purpose in keeping them. People die. You know, once somebody dies, there's no more money to make off of them. General Motors loses interest in you when you die. They know they're not going to be selling you any more Chevrolet automobiles, and so they don't keep records on you anymore. I said, well, that's really interesting. So now that just tells all of us a little piece of the story. Trade, commerce, business, and industry is interested in making money off of you, and if you don't maintain or if you don't keep current records, if you don't keep current market information and use it regularly, then it disappears. And so those records ultimately disappear. Government school records, government military records, government police records, they don't ever disappear. But you don't have to create any more. So there can be a cutoff date. You know, they can have records, like in my case, they've got records up to 1957 as to my academic progress. But from 1957 on, nobody knows what I've got between my ears, and I'm not telling them. They know how smart I was in 1957, but they don't know how smart I am today, and I ain't telling them. That's private. Although the government likes to know what you know, because they want to know how smart you are. You know, there's an old story that went about, and I can share this with you. This guy took his car in and wanted to get it fixed, and it wasn't running too good. And so this mechanic, he listened to it a little bit, you know, he said, open the hood. So he opened the hood, and the mechanic reached in with a screwdriver, you know, he turned one little screw on the carburetor, got the car just straightened right out, started running real good, you know. And the guy said, my God, you're a miracle worker. So the mechanic wrote him up a bill, and it said $50. And this guy was really incensed. He says, What? You're going to charge me $50 for turning one screw? And the customer said, I demand an itemized bill. I'm going to complain to General Motors about you. So Mr. Goodrich wrote him up an itemized bill, and it said, adjust carburetor idle screw, 50 cents. Knowing what screw to adjust, $49.50. Total $50, and he gave him his bill, and said, there it is, itemized bill. See, the real value is in knowing what screw to adjust, not in adjusting the screw itself. And governments like that, they want to know, well, how many degrees do you have, and what level of education have you attained? And so when you come along and say, well, I'm a PhD, see, they deal with you a little differently than they do if you've got a master's, or a little differently if you've got a bachelor's, or a little differently, you know, if you've got a high school diploma, or a little differently if you're a high school dropout. There's just nothing more valuable in life than to be a high school dropout who knows more than a PhD and keeps it under his hat. Just drives everybody nuts when they don't know how much you know. Hang on. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Remember, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, history, health, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just call the school direct if you'd like. It's number 417, or area code, I should say, 417-273-4967. Well, getting back to my boy here, we filled out the form, gave it to the lady, and she said, well, he can't be registered for school unless you fill this out and sign it. And I said, well, we want to comply with the law, and the law requires that we register for school, and we're here to register. I'm not here to contract with the state of Idaho by signing my name. And you want to remember something. Every time you sign your name, you impair your liberty to some degree. A common law free man should be able to live his life from birth to death and never sign his name a single time. I don't sign my name. I can't remember the last time I signed my name to some document or piece of paper. I do from time to time. Sometimes I act as a witness on an asseveration, or sometimes I'll do it. I can't remember, but it happens from time to time. But, you know, I don't sign contracts with banks and insurance companies and corporations. And not that I'm telling you shouldn't. You know, you might want to. You might want to impair your liberty to some degree for some reason, like joining the military or something. But you need to understand that when you sign your name, you're impairing your liberty. So if that's what you want to do, you know, get after it. But if you don't want to impair your liberty, you should be very cautious and very judicious about what you sign. People sign their names just like they give out personal information. They don't think anything about it because it's common. You were taught to do that from the first grade on. Privacy isn't something that you're taught and trained in. Privacy is something that develops because of some innate desire on your part. So I didn't sign it. They said that he can't attend school, and I said, well, that's fine. We don't care whether he attends school or not. We're not here to get you to educate our child free. We came here because the law requires that we register him for school, and here we are. We're ready. We're willing. We're able. We're ready to be taught in the public school, but we're not going to contract with you, and we're not going to give you your telephone number. We're not going to tell you what our address is, and I'm not going to sign the agreement. In the final analysis, they went ahead and took him to school anyway. He was the only kid in the high school that didn't have registration. They said, well, without registration, you can't get a student body card. Okay. We'll live without a student body card. I don't know. There were some other things they said he couldn't have and couldn't do. Oh, without registration, he couldn't participate in driver's education. I said, okay. And so he didn't get driver's education. I'd teach him how to drive all by himself. So he was in public high school and couldn't get driver's education because he wasn't registered, couldn't get a student body card because he wasn't registered. No, I don't know. There's three or four other things he couldn't get. Maybe he couldn't eat in the cafeteria or something. I don't know. It was nothing of any great significance or importance. And he went to public schools like everybody else. But it kind of demonstrates a point. You see, the legislature says you got to educate this kid till he's 16. The kid's 14. The law requires that we show up for school. We showed up for school. They said, we're not going to let him in. He's going to be truant. And I said, well, listen, excuse me. We walk in the door. We say, please educate us. And then you sit there and say, if we don't contract with you, Mr. Gordon, if you won't sign this contract with us, we won't educate him. And then we're going to charge you with a crime. Come on, kids. Let's grow up and get real. There wasn't anybody there in that school district wanted to test that issue in the Supreme Court. I did. And I guess that's why most people give up their privacy, because they're really terrified of the judicial system and the court system, and they don't know how this mysterious judicial system works, and they don't want to test these issues. So they just get on the bus and go to the back of the bus and shut up. And so I guess that's why they should ride the back of the bus. Well, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on each American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. You'll see this in the report on privacy, Who is Watching You, published in U.S. News and World Report, July 12, 1982. So back in July of 1982, U.S. News and World Report reported in an article that the federal government, this isn't your state, this isn't your county, this isn't your city, this isn't your school board, this isn't anybody else, just the federal government maintains 15 files on every American. Do you know that? I would contend with you that if the federal government has 15 files and the state government has a few files and your county government and city government and police department, and, you know, by the time you start adding all these up, I'll bet you there's 20 or 30 of these files out here by government agencies alone, not to mention all the information collected about you by pharmaceutical industries, insurance companies, the American Medical Association, dental associations, and dentists and doctors and all these other people out there, you know. So it shouldn't be any big surprise that you people don't have very much privacy, or there isn't very much that government or industry or business doesn't know about you. But you could start on the project. And as I mentioned, you know, you're not going to change the records that go back 30 or 40 years, but you can start today. And from this day forward, you don't have to give anybody any information about you. I mean, you can start to be private starting today. And you can have just as much privacy as you can glean from today forward. But, you know, from today backward, you're not entitled to any privacy. I mean, after all, those 15 files that are kept on file by the federal government are files. Those are forms that you filled out and gave to the government. The information that you gave to the Social Security Administration when you signed up for the Social Security card, you didn't have any qualms about surrendering that information and giving up your privacy when you did that. They offered you something, and you said, I want what they're offering me. And they said, the price is your privacy. And you said, okay, I'll give up my privacy for these benefits from Social Security. And they gave you the benefits, and you gave up your privacy. That sounds like a pretty fair bargain. Now, if from today forward you don't want to give them any more information, you don't have to. There's a case one time came out of the Supreme Court called U.S. versus Roy. And this guy, Roy, said, well, we don't want to give up our little girl's privacy. We don't want to give up her religious free exercise over here. And we don't want a Social Security number for her. And the court came back and said, that's fine. That's fine, Mr. Roy. You don't have to give up any of your child's privacy or religious beliefs or practices. You just can't have the Social Security benefits. Well, I guess this guy, Roy, was probably pretty saddened by that. See, he wanted the benefits without the number, and the court said, well, you don't have to have the number, but you can't get the benefits without the number. And that's what government does. See, they come to you and they say, well, look, you don't have to surrender your privacy, but if you want these welfare and food stamps, then we got to know what your name, address, and phone number is and all this personal information. So I woke up one day and I said, you know, I think I'll give up all these government benefits for my privacy. And that tells you quite a bit of the story. See, privacy is not at the top of most Americans' list of priorities. They're not really too concerned about that. And I'm not here to free the slaves. I'm not here to deliver privacy to you. I don't care whether you're private or not. I don't care if the government knows all about you, half about you, or nothing about you. It's irrelevant to me. The government knows a whole lot less about me today than they did 30 years ago. And they'll know a whole lot less about me over the next 30 years than they do today. And that's because I'm not going to tell them anymore. I'm not going to fill out 15 forms for the federal government, state government, or anybody else. I don't fill out government forms. I don't give out information. And I don't send my telephone number out to just everybody. Now somebody's going to write me an email and say, ha, 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 Mr. Gordon, well, you give your telephone number over the radio every day. And I'm going to say, yeah, that's the telephone number that you can call. Well, you just go ahead and call that number and see if you can talk to me, sucker. Go ahead, call the number and see if you get me the answer. Now, there are some people out there that can call me and they can talk to me. And I'm sure the White House has a telephone number. And I'm sure if you want to call President Bush, you can call that number. But I'll guarantee you, you ain't going to talk to Bush. But I'll bet you George has a number that Dick Cheney can call when he wants to talk to George. And that's what privacy is all about, boys and girls. There's a public side and there's a private side. I have a public side. I got an email. I got a computer. And then there's a private side. And you can't talk to me. There are some people that can, and there are some people that can't, and that's what privacy is all about. And if you want to be in a position where some people can talk to you and some people can't, then maybe you want some more privacy. Now, closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on citizens. Did you know that? In a study conducted 2 years ago, now remember this is 1982, and then 2 years ago, that's 1980, and in a study conducted in 1980 by the New York Committee on Open Government, they found that the state of New York operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contain 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those 1,776 separate data systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Let's think about those numbers for a minute. The state of New York is just one of 50 states in the union, and they keep information on such things as how many people in the state of New York are unemployed. And so one of those 1,776 data systems will be keeping track of unemployed people. And the people that are unemployed, in order to get into one of those 1,776 systems, has to go down and sign up. They have to go down and fill out a form and give it to the Department of Employment and identify themselves as being unemployed. And that's because they want unemployment benefits. Those people aren't concerned about privacy. They're concerned about, can I get these benefits at taxpayer expense? For those of us that aren't trying to milk the taxpayers, see, I'm not trying to take any money from taxpayers, and I'm not unemployed, and I'm not employed. And I'm not trying to get any welfare or food stamps, so I don't go down to these government agencies and fill out forms and give them this information. The state of New York doesn't have any information about George Gordon. Now, I would imagine that the state of Missouri probably has some information, but they didn't get any information from me because I didn't give it to them. So whatever information they've got is called hearsay. Somebody else had to collect it. Somebody else had to put it in somebody's file. Once in a while, I get a letter from the government. You know, they'll send me a letter, and they'll say, well, you're a farmer over here, aren't you? Well, fill out this form over here and tell us how many cows you got. They got a new program coming out here. They want farmers to register all of their livestock with the government. I'm not going to do that. Then somebody comes along and says, well, you'll be breaking the law. No, I won't. I don't deal in trade, commerce, business, or industry, so if I stay out of commerce, I won't be affecting any public interest. So our Constitution provides for privacy, and it's when you enter the public arena that you lose your privacy. You know, privacy is something that you own, something that you're entitled to, something that you're guaranteed. If you don't want your privacy, you got to get out of bed in the morning. You got to get out and be proactive. You got to get out and do something. I mean, you got to get up, put on your clothes, and go downtown and surrender your privacy. I mean, if you just stayed in bed and didn't give up your privacy, didn't throw it away, didn't fill out the forms, your government wouldn't know anything about you. You mean you got to get up and you got to go down to the medical clinic and you've got to fill out forms and sign them to give up your privacy. To surrender your privacy takes action. If you'd sit down, shut up, and fold your hands, you'd be totally private. Did you know that? There's nobody out here taking your privacy away from you. You got to shovel it away. You got to throw it away. You got to work hard to get rid of it. Those 1,776 government agencies in New York State, they're not out here knocking on your door. There's only one agency that does that. It's the Census Department. They're so damn lazy, they send you a form in the mail. You don't hear anything from the census lady until you don't send it back. To show you how lazy the Department of Agriculture is, they've got some statutes that require farmers to fill out these forms and to send them in. You know, if you've signed up for some program, you've got to reciprocate by sending in the information. I've never signed up for any of the benefits, so I don't have to reciprocate. They never follow up. You just take the form and throw it over here in file 13, and that's the end of it. I've heard from them for a long time now. I guess they get tired of sending me information, spending their money on postage stamps, although I can't understand why, because they don't pay for them. They got us taxpayers out here paying for the postage stamps so that they can harass us with more requests for more information. But I guess after you don't give them the information, they're kind of like private enterprisers, you know. I got to tell you a little story over here. You ever get all this information, you know, that's coming into your post office box, you know, junk mail, and you complain about it? Have you ever thought about put on a return to sender? They got to pay the postage to get it back. Somebody sends me a letter, you know, I put on their not at this address, return to sender, and they send it back. They take me right off their mailing list, you know. I just thought I'd share that with you for a second. In the private sector, the dossiers multiply. Retail credit bureaus maintain files on over 150 million Americans. Banks record your checks and other financial transactions. Credit card companies track your purchases and repayment patterns. The telephone company notes the numbers that you've called. Insurance companies keep files on the most intimate details of your medical care, from abortions to psychiatric treatment. And taken together, these records comprise a fairly complete, if not always accurate, picture of your lifestyle, our personal tastes, our associations, and even our political beliefs. And much of this data collected about us is necessary for the performance of a legitimate government or business function. But once the purpose for the data gathering has been served, there is scant justification for keeping this information on file. Oh no. There's all kinds of reasons to keep this information on file. And they do. They sell it to other companies. Picture it. You're the John Deere company and you're selling snowmobiles. You want the mailing lists of everybody that lives in Minnesota. They're all potential customers. You don't want the mailing lists of people that live in Louisiana, but you do want the mailing lists of the people who live in Minnesota, North Dakota, and Montana. And so the people that collect this information are selling it to other businesses, selling these mailing lists. That's why you get all that junk mail in the mail. You go to your doctor, you fill out a form, he sells that mailing list to the John Deere company, and they send you a brochure in the mail and says, here, buy a snowmobile. Buy a boat and water ski in Louisiana. That's the purpose for all of this information. It's to sell you more stuff. That's why you have so much junk mail in your post office box, and that's why you have little or no privacy. And everybody knows something about you, and they know enough about you to cancel your health insurance because they find out when you find out when you've got leukemia or some other disease. Personal information that you really didn't want anybody else to know. All right, we got to leave it right there for this session. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.